I'm not an expert in the groundwater monitoring program and the sources of contamination that we're seeing at Four Mile. We can certainly get you that information.
I would appreciate that.
There is an extensive groundwater monitoring well network, not unlike what was described at the commercial nuke plants, right? We have literally dozens and dozens of wells. And so from that data is probably where the information was deduced. But let us get you the accurate answer from the expert.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Other questions?
Okay. Thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate it.
Turn it over to Pete.
This is Pete Hill. He's the system planning manager for Savannah River Remediation, and he will go over system plan Rev 19.
Okay. Good. Excuse me. Good afternoon. Before I get into Rev 19 of the system plan, I'll just give a very brief liquid waste overview, and that kind of ties together some of the outcomes that we'll talk about when we talk about the system plan. Right now we have about 37 million gallons of radioactive waste stored in the waste tanks. About 10% of that is precipitated metal oxides and hydroxides that have settled at the bottom. We call that sludge. We've been treating the sludge since 1996 at DWPF. That's where we produce the vitrified canisters. As Neil mentioned, since 2008, we've been initiated processing the other 90% of the waste, which is a salt liquid, either a hard salt cake or dissolved salt solution. In the future, in 2018, the high capacity salt waste processing facility will start up. Both of those facilities extract desired radionuclides for incorporation of the vitrified waste form, and then primarily chemicals in the decontaminated salt solution are sent to Saltstone, and this is where Steve talked about the various vaults that we have. As the tanks are cleaned, Dan described just a moment ago the process for getting those to closure. And you can see the vast majority of the radionuclides that are in the waste right now end up in the vitrified canisters. A much smaller portion will be grouted with the waste tanks, and then an even smaller portion than that ends up in the salt stone at in the grout over at salt stone. When we talk about the liquid waste system, it kind of helps if you visualize this as an analogy of a set of integrated gears. And by that, it helps to think if you want to close a tank, before you can close the tank, you have to clean it and you need a place for the waste to go. If it's sludge, we have to send the sludge to DWPF. And if we're going to operate DWPF and produce canisters, those need to end up in the glass waste storage for temporary holding until they're shipped to the federal repository. Before we take the salt waste out of a tank, we need to be operating ARP, MCU, or SWPF. As I mentioned on the previous slide, if we're operating ARP, MCU, it's sending radionuclides to DWPF, so those are highly integrated facilities. And just like you need a place to temporarily store the canisters to operate salt processing, we need salt stone to operate, and then we need to have salt disposal units constructed and ready to receive that grout. And when we want to turn one of the gears faster, then all of the other gears have to ramp up proportionally. And looking at this slide, it's important to remember that to make the SDU gear, the glass waste storage gear, and the bulk sludge removal gears turn faster, take a considerable increase in funding. So those are the expensive gears to turn. As Dan mentioned, you know, here we have to throw all the design effort, equipment installation occurs in the tank cleaning and closure process. And when you look at system plans, they're a useful tool. You know, one of the major reasons we do the plans is so that decision makers can make informed decisions. And that could be at the lower level. The operating crews at the facilities use the system plan to understand what evolutions they're doing on a daily basis. And that goes all the way up the chain to the headquarters for DOE, including the secretary. And we use the system plans to analyze the benefits and impacts of changes to some of the key inputs. And those can be things like advances in technology. If you look at the change between revision 14 and revision 15 of our system plan, we're able to show the benefits of deploying the bubblers and the melter DWPF. Those enabled us to double the melt rate and therefore increase the rate at which we can process sludge. Changes in sequencing would be something like a change in the SWPF startup date. The only significant difference in Rev 17 to Rev 18 of the system plan was the change in the SWPF startup date to the current 2018 that we're assuming. Acceleration opportunities. In revision 16 of the system plan, we were able to show the benefits of the additional ARRA funding we were receiving and an advancement in technology for an alternate salt processing called small column ion exchange. That acceleration allowed us to project potential to reduce the liquid waste life cycle by 6 years and save about $3 billion. And lastly, is probably the most common one, and those are funding adjustments. The sole difference between Rev 16 and 17 was a funding adjustment, and you'll see here when we talk about Rev 19, the only significant difference between Rev 18 and 19 was a change in our assumed funding profile. And that funding profile we're assuming for this modeling effort was that we would have $407 million, and these are dollars direct to SRR. It doesn't include some other things that, like site overheads, et cetera. But $407 million in FY14, increasing to $430 FY15 through 19. That includes construction of a new glass waste storage project and the construction of the SDUs. And then in FY20, that number goes to $525 million, and that also includes operation of SWPF. So at first blush, you would say it looks like the funding you're getting is steadily increasing. If we look at this graph here on the upper right side, though, I want to point out that in the next 4 years, we need to prepare for the startup of SWPF. And when we can take into consideration the projects that we need to do to modify the liquid waste system to support SWPF, the construction of the additional glass waste storage, the construction of the additional saltstone disposal units, the amount of money that's left over, and that's represented by this gray area here, the amount that's left over for the rest of the liquid waste system, that's to operate DWPF, operate RPMCU, operate the evaporators, install the waste removal equipment Dan talked about, do the final cleaning, sampling, closure of the tanks, infrastructure maintenance, it's been mentioned several times that the facilities are getting older. The first waste went into our tanks in 1954, so they're getting up in age, so that infrastructure maintenance cost is steadily increasing as well. So the money that's left over to apply to those things is actually decreasing in the near term. And what happened when we used this funding profile to do our modeling, we identified two significant undesirable outcomes. The first one is that when SWPF starts up, we can't support it at its rated capacity for the first 6 years, and I'll talk about that on an upcoming slide. And then after grouting of 5 and 6, which are already done, and then 12 and 16 coming up here in the third term, as Dan mentioned, we can't afford or don't have the extra funding to grout another tank until 2024. So when we dig into why SWPF is not supported at the rated capacity in this scenario, we found several things that were contributing to that. Down in the lower right-hand corner is a table that shows in this second column what the projected SWPF capacity is, or what that standalone facility is capable of processing. The Rev 19 column here right in the middle is what our modeling indicates that facility will be able to operate at, given our ability to send waste to it to be processed and our ability then to take the effluents from SWPF at Saltstone and at DWPF. In the first 3 years of operation, SWPF is held below its capacity due to our inability to feed it. And the reason for that is because we can't take the waste directly out of one of our waste tanks and send it straight to SWPF. We actually have to take a mixture of wastes from four or five different locations to be able to hit the speed feed specification for things like sodium, cesium concentration, technetium, aluminum, iodine-129, oxalates, etc. So in order to assemble that feed and that recipe, we actually need to repurpose one of our current waste tanks for that. And we repurpose it by emptying it with ARP MCU. So ultimately, the first 3 years of SWPF operation are impacted by our inability to run ARP MCU at higher throughputs over the next 4 years between now and when SWPF starts up. And I'll talk about that briefly on the next slide. And then in FY 22, 3, and 4, so the third, fourth, and fifth years of SWPF operation, we identified that modifications that we need to make to DWPF and Saltstone, we were not able to afford to have those deployed at the time SWPF starts up. Right now, both DWPF and Saltstone can support SWPF throughputs up to 6 million gallons without any modifications, but to go to the higher throughputs, we need to do modifications of both facilities and maybe more importantly at Saltstone, we need to increase the operator staffing. Right now, we're only staffed to operate Saltstone 4 days a week for 10 hours a day. In order to support SWPF at the high capacity, we need 24/7 operation. So between now and supporting those high throughputs, we need to hire additional staffing and get them trained. And that requires funding. So the net impact of underutilizing SWPF for the first 6 years is that we're about 18 million gallons behind where we would be if we could fully support SWPF at startup. And at the top throughput of 9 million gallons a year, that means we add about 2 years to the liquid waste life cycle given this set of inputs to the modeling. Tank closure activities, I mentioned it, and Dan talked about it. Tanks 5 and 6 were completed very early in this fiscal year. 12 and 16 are coming up in the near term. And as I said on the previous slide, given the funding profile that we used for this modeling effort, we didn't have funding available to grout the next tank, which would be tank 11, until 2024. Looking at ARP MCU processing, I mentioned that it wasn't operated fast enough to empty out tank space to allow us to support SWPF. And that's one of the functions of ARP. Right now, in addition to providing technical data to SWPF so that it can run better when it starts up, ARP MCU allows us to continue to prepare sludge for DWPF. It's a critical support evaporator operation. That's all part of that integrated nature of the gears. It allows us to remove the waste from the tank so they can be closed. It allows us to continue to receive additional waste from H Canyon operations. And the one that is important though in this discussion is it allows us to empty out tank space to support SWPF. As Neil mentioned, we are utilizing the next generation solvent in ARP MCU that allows more of the radionuclides, a higher percentage, to go into the vitrified waste form. The third bullet there, when we looked at why our ARP MCU throughput was limited, there's four items there, and those are in order of most limiting at the top to less limiting towards the bottom, but they're all relatively close. The most limiting item right now, as Gene mentioned, one of the challenges we've had here in the last year is a significant reduction in our workforce. So our staffing at ARP MCU primarily and Saltstone does not support processing greater than the values that are shown in this table here on the right-hand side. So one of the first things we would need to do to get to higher throughputs is increase our staffing. The availability of the Saltstone disposal units it is only slightly behind in limiting ARP MCU throughput. Right behind that is availability of additional canister storage locations. So right now, all those gears are synchronized to support ARP MCU at a given throughput. To get a higher throughput, we need to accelerate multiple locations in the liquid waste flow sheet. And as with previous plans, we're prepared, and we assume that ARP MCU will operate up until 6 months prior to the startup of SWPF. Looking at our sludge processing, our strategy in this plan is that the salt processing gear in that drive chain is the one that determines the speed of all the other gears. So our sludge processing is synchronized with the projected salt processing at ARPMCU. At the beginning of the fiscal year, we had 822 canister storage locations available. This plan stays within that available storage space. The additional canister storage is expected to be available at about the same time that SWPF starts up. That's November of 2018. And as I mentioned, retrieving the sludge is a very expensive part of our operation. So the bulk sludge retrievals are paced so that they provide a just-in-time supply to produce the canisters there shown in the right-hand table. SDU construction, also very critical to keeping the production that we've shown. The current SDU 6 that's under construction needs to be in service by May of 2017. And then you can see for SDU 7, 8, 9 follow not too far behind that. But also, as I mentioned, a significant driver in the cost profile. So when we look at the outputs of the modeling compared to the previous plan, we see that when we talk about type 1, 2, and 4 tanks, those are the old-style tanks Dan referred to, which don't have the full secondary containment. BWRE is bulk waste removal efforts complete, so that's when the bulk of the waste is taken out. Subsequent to that bulk removal is the heel cleaning, final sampling, etc. So in Rev 19, we don't have the last of the bulk waste out of the older style tanks until 2028. The final older style tank is grouted in 2032. The bulk of the sludge in all of the tanks, so that also includes the 27 tanks with full secondary containment, it finishes in 2030. The bulk of the salt waste is finished processing at SWPF 2033, and the last heel is removed out in 2039. In revision 18, we were able to augment the salt processing at SWPF with the small column ion exchange. It's an at-tank salt treatment process. Due to the lower funding profile, that is not something that we were able to include in Rev 19 of the plan. And there's some more information there, but essentially the remainder of the table is similar results from Rev 18 to 19. We also include in Rev 19 an alternative analysis, and the question that was posed is, well, what would it take to get SWPF to the rated capacity? And that kind of goes back to all those things I was talking about earlier on when we looked into why the modeling was showing that given this set of inputs, we couldn't support SWPF. So it's kind of an obvious reverse engineering there that we need to have the DWPF enhancements. ELOD phase two is saltstone improvements, and SPF is saltstone staffing. So we need to do those modifications at DWPF and saltstone, increase staffing in time to support SWPF startups. So we need those about 5 years earlier. So that would increase the funding profile. We need to do some improvements to ARPMCU that would allow it to operate at a higher throughput. The table here in the lower left shows that if we increase the staffing at ARPMCU and do some modifications in the next 2 years, that by 2017 we could get to around 4.7 million gallons a year processing at ARPMCU, and then in FY18 it's 6 months of the same kind of operation. But that gives us a net additional 4 million gallons of processing between now and when SWPF starts up, and that relieves the constraint I had mentioned in the first 3 years of our inability to feed SWPF, so we're able now to support feeding SWPF at the rated capacity. And by deploying the DWPF and saltstone improvements and staffing at startup, we're also then able to support them at the higher rates on the back end. So given those improvements and our ability to support SWPF at the rated capacity, we repeated the table and compared the alternative case to the Rev 19. And you can see that there's a 1 year improvement in getting the bulk of the waste out of the old style tanks, a 1 year improvement in grouting the last of the old style tanks, and a 2 year improvement in the other parameters for all of the tanks. We're also working on a Rev 19 addendum. It's another case that DWE's asked us to look at, and this will be very similar to the alternative case, but they've asked us to give preference to getting the bulk of the waste out of the old style tanks in lieu of some of the other things that we pursue, and we're just beginning that modeling, and I really don't have any details on the output yet. So just to summarize what I've talked about so far, some things we've gleaned from this modeling exercise on Rev 19, we've reconfirmed the importance of SWPF starting up on the startup date and processing at the rated capacity. We've also then brought to a realization to some that the importance of near-term salt processing that ARPMC really does have a mission to do between now and SWPF so that SWPF can start at the rated capacity. It emphasizes again the need for the modifications to the downstream facilities, DWPF and Saltstone, and emphasizes the importance of getting the Saltstone disposal units constructed when needed. The last two slides are information that I believe Karen requested after I did this similar presentation with the Citizens Advisory Board. That's a comparison. What you're looking at here is these are the system plan revisions, starting with revision 2 out the Rev 19. The red diamond is the date at which the last tank of all 51 is completely closed. And then the indications, these different marks, are the dates when the various older style tanks are closed. And you can see the various modeling exercises have, in some cases, shown extensions of the program due to, in this case here and here, and with Rev 19, as we discussed, decreases in funding. There are other times where we had improvements in technology or increases in funding in result of some of our modeling outputs. And then very similar to that on the last slide, this is when the waste is removed from the older style tanks. If you look on the first slide of the two, the first versions of the system plan didn't predict tank closures. They just, starting with Rev 7, we had tank closures, so we've included when the waste came out of the older style tanks, because that was included in early versions of the plan. Any questions?
Yes, I have one. What is the environmental impact of cutting out the ion exchange program, part of that?
Well, the ion exchange and SWPF have projected equivalent radionuclide removal efficiency, so there's no delta change to the radionuclides that are placed within Saltstone. So from that perspective, there's no change to environmental impact. If you go back to the slide, I'll do it right now, that has a comparison of Rev 18 to Rev 19, you'll see that salt processing is extended by 5 years in the two scenarios. As we talked about earlier, two of those years are due to SWPF not being supported at the rated capacity. The other three are due to not having small column ion exchange deployed. So there is an impact of having the waste in the tanks for three additional years.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, well, this is pretty dismal. Sorry.
I have one quick question.
Yes, sir.
Maybe you can't answer this, but is there any plan for an underground piping program similar to what all the commercial nuclear power plants have, just as we heard about earlier this morning, this afternoon, rather?
You like referring to like a maintenance program for the underground piping, or?
Yes. I'd just like to explain to us here, and every nuclear power plant in the country has an underground piping program, and since SRS has been down there since the 50s, I assume that they've got a lot of pipes underground that have been there a long time.
Hey, Neil, do you want to talk? Yeah, please.
Yeah, so I'll divide it into two pieces here. We have underground
Neil,
waste transfer lines.
Come up to the mic, please. Thank you.
We have underground waste transfer lines, all of which have a jacket. So while those systems are getting older, We don't anticipate leaking waste to the ground because the core pipe failed and the jacket failed. We have a very rigorous testing program. So while they're getting older, I don't think that will result in an insult to the environment. On the other hand, we have underground service piping, steam, air, water, chromated cooling water, that sort of thing. All of that piping is a minimum of 30 years old, some is 60 years old. Where we are most reliant on that piping to make that gear chart turn that Pete just showed, we're bringing that piping above grade. So if you went out to the tank farm right now, as an example, you would see us building supports to bring the piping above grade. So I would say we do have a piping program. We're at the very, we're about a year into it. It's at least a three-year trip, and we're going after the highest priority areas first.
Have you looked into the programs that have been in place in the commercial power plants for years and years? Do you have some ideas from there?
Yeah, we're just starting to get into that. We have a combination of some things we need to do right now, and then we're also got an eye towards the future. So as far as what we're going to do over the next several years, we are starting to look at and benchmark reactor practices. Does thank that answer your
question? Thank you, yes.
Go ahead.
I have one question. You know, perhaps you were here to hear Ms. Wilson's comments about the possibility of the state imposing some fines. And I was wondering whether you'd estimated the effect of that for in any of your planning.
No, sir.
Because that could wind up being significant.
Particularly if they have to pay for it.
And yeah, I mean, that could significantly change the numbers involved. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you've considered in terms of presenting this to headquarters? In terms of accounting for that?
Headquarters is well aware of the state's letter to Moniz, and they are currently working a response to that letter. I don't know exactly when it will be issued, but all I can say at this point is the department is well aware that the state has put in their letter that they intend to fine us if we don't make the commitments or miss the commitments based on funding. So the department is working to address that, and we're currently developing an executive team to look at the strategy of
yes,
how we want to go forward.
Yeah, but when you talk about extending this, you know, and not grouting until another tank until 2024. That's a cost that you can immediately put into your model, and they should be aware of. And if you haven't included that in the model, why haven't you?
Well, Rev 19 in the model, we were waiting for it to run to see what the impacts were before we would know that we were going to miss these milestones by what it's projecting. However, as you saw by some of the revisions, we've had, it's a tool, it's a modeling tool. And in the past, sometimes it's shown us extending the life cycle way beyond what we thought, but changes in funding, changes in the way we do work have pulled that back. So at this point, we're not prepared to incorporate or say that we have missed any milestones, because we have not as of this date.
Yeah, but you're trying to model and project into the future, and you've got a law that you're trying to have to, presumably you're going to have to follow the law. And if the state's talking about imposing this fine, then you should project into it and should take into account the fact that the state is going to impose this fine. And I don't understand why you haven't included that kind of a thing in your model.
Ben, so are you suggesting that the fine, the dollars for the fine, is going to come out of the high-level waste funding?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you, that's additional cost.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that question. I'll have to take it back.